to the jack.
We have... just make sure. Okay. There's a passage.
And get it back in baby messing with range. Had it anchored down there so Danielle couldn't grab it. Okay, let's start over, shall we? As we've been looking at the Sermon on the Mount, we have come through chapter 5, and we're moving into chapter 6. There's a verse I want to remind us of in chapter 5 when it comes to this idea of practicing righteousness. We've been talking about reaching for God's righteousness. When Jesus says in 5:16, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. And so there's this idea, and we talked about this, that we must be influencing the world for good, that we must be letting people see what we're doing so that they can glorify our Father in heaven. But then we get to chapter 6, and there's this statement here where Jesus says, be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. Otherwise, you have no reward with your Father in heaven. And so we look at that, and most people look at that, and they say, well, okay, so now I shouldn't let people see what I'm doing. And so which is it? Do I let people see? Do I not let people see? What's the deal? And as we get into chapter 6 and we look at these verses, and we're going to go through verse 18. We're not going to talk about every part of it. I'm going to say some things about prayer my next time up. In particular. But as we talk about this, we ask the question, well, what motivates your righteousness? What motivates you to do righteous things? And there's three things that Jesus talks about specifically here in these verses. From verses 2 through 4, he's going to talk about giving to the poor. Verses 5 through 15 talks about prayer, and then he talks in 16, 17, 18 about fasting. And we're not going to get too much into particulars of any one of these things, though most of my specific comments will probably deal more with that first idea of giving to the poor and things around it, doing good things for others. But there's these three things, and he follows some similar patterns in here as he talks about them. But I want us to go to this idea of motive, because I think at the end of the day, it's really not about whether somebody sees you doing the right thing that Jesus is getting at here. It's not about, okay, well, if anybody sees you do this, it just completely invalidates it. And I think a good illustration, I debated whether to invoke this reference, is those of you who are of a certain age or who, like me, who like to watch certain TV shows that were on before our time may remember the episode of MASH where it's around Christmas and they're collecting funds for the orphans, as often happened, and Major Winchester doesn't participate in that, but he goes and at night he goes and he leaves this package at the orphanage, and it's all these chocolates and everything, and it's apparently this family tradition about doing this secretly. And for in order for it to be valid, it had to be a secret. And so it's a little disruptive to him when the keeper of the orphanage sees him and meets him at the door and everything. But then we realize there's something a little bit amiss, because he's incensed later on when he sees these candies and these chocolates. These are the finest chocolates that are being, just kind of Somebody just had bought them because the person running the orphanage had sold them. And he's incensed at this. And how dare you take this out of the mouth of children? And the keeper of the orphanage explains to him, you did a very nice thing, but with all this, with these chocolate, the chocolate will feed a child for a day, but I can buy rice for a month. And then Winchester has his realization. But the thing about that whole episode, that whole scene, is it really wasn't about the seeing or not seeing. Because even with the seeing or not seeing, Winchester being Winchester still had this issue of, you know, it was this point of pride with him of how he did this thing and how his family did this thing. And I think here, it's really at the end of the day not about whether anybody sees you or not. It's about the motive behind it. And I think we see this when we look at verse 1 where Jesus says, be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. Otherwise, you have no reward with your Father in heaven. The next verse, as he talks about doing good for the poor, whenever you give to the poor, don't sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets, to be applauded by people. Verse 5, don't stand, they love to pray on the standing on the synagogue, in the synagogues and on the street corners to be seen by people. Anybody noticing a pattern yet? Verse 16, they disfigure their faces so that their fasting is obvious to people. Their purpose, these hypocrites he talks about, and we find out, of course, in chapter 23 that the hypocrites are the scribes and the Pharisees, if you didn't already figure that out by now. But the hypocrites were doing these things because they wanted people to see them and praise them and see them and praise them. This wasn't what Jesus talked about in chapter 5, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. It was so that they would be glorified by the people who saw them. In contrast, God's people, we practice righteousness for God's glory, not our own. And that's the thing that I think Jesus wants us to see in these examples in talking about practicing righteousness. We practice righteousness for God's glory, not our own. And so how do we do that? Well, the first thing I would suggest, there's three things I'm going to suggest to you. The first thing is to focus on God. Now, that seems obvious, right? We talk about glorifying God. How do we do that? Well, we focus on God. This whole chapter, as it's divided out, is about priority. It's about motive. It's going to end with Jesus saying, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. And so it should go without saying, but we'll still say it, that for us to glorify God in our practice of righteousness, our focus has to be on God. And if that's the case, everything's going to fall from that. We read in 1 Timothy chapter 5 about the widow who's truly in need and left all alone. It says she has put her hope in God. And what happens because she's put her hope in God? She continues night and day in her petitions and prayers. This is the natural extension of that. Our practice of righteousness is a natural extension of our devotion to God. And so there shouldn't, we get into a vapor lock sometimes about this, and we'll say more about this in our next point. But we get in a vapor lock about this, and we either question it or we're trying to manufacture the circumstances. That's what's going on here in chapter 6 of Matthew, is the hypocrites were manufacturing the occasions for them to practice righteousness. They were sounding the trumpet. That is, you know, as they went on to do this great thing, they were sounding the trumpet, had this procession, and this person is doing this great thing. You may recall toward the end of Jesus' ministry, when they're at the temple, one occasion when they're at the temple, and Jesus' disciples are watching the people contribute to the temple treasury. And they're marveling at all the great, at the large gifts that many of them, of the people there were giving. And the reason why they knew there were such large gifts is that the design of the money containers was such that, you know, and keep in mind, this is in the days before personal checks. This is also in the days before paper money, where you could put a whole wad of stuff together. You know, money was coins. And the design of the money containers was such that you couldn't put it in, you couldn't put the money in very fast. It also made a lot of noise. And so when you knew that when somebody was standing there at the money box for a long time, that they had a lot of money to put in. And so it was very easy to marvel at, wow, look at what this person's bringing in. Look, is contributing to the temple. The analogy that came to my mind in this is those big oversized checks. And I understand how that works with businesses doing charitable giving. And I think everybody understands why businesses do check presentations with these big, super huge checks that are just for show. But imagine somebody calling a press conference specifically to announce that they were contributing this much money with the big oversized check and everything, and everybody's applauding them and saying what a great job they're doing there. And that's much the scene that Jesus is describing here, where it's this manufactured occasion to maximize the impact. Talk about the prayers in the synagogues and making this big show of their prayers, and on the street corners where you see them out and they're in the street corners and they're out praying with their arms outstretched, and well, that person's praying. I imagine the scene, you know, Jesus has this parable, the Pharisee and the tax collector. I imagine that the scene there is the Pharisee is right out there in open. He's doing this so everybody can see that he's praying and probably not being too quiet about, God, I thank you that I am not like other people. And then you have the tax collector. Now, apparently the Pharisee could see the tax collector, but the tax collector standing over in the shadows. And his head is down. And he says, Lord, be merciful to me, the sinner. See the difference? The fasting. When Jesus talks about they make their faces unattractive so that the fasting is obvious to people. Apparently, at that time, there were certain days that were more common for going to the market. And so, and understand that when we talk about fasting, we think a lot of times about, you know, Jesus fasting 40 days a night in the wilderness or those big, long marathon fasts. Really, most fasting in the Bible is probably the example, the reference we could use today is Muslims during the month of Ramadan, where it's fasting from sunup to sundown. And so during the day, they didn't eat anything. They would make their fasting schedule, because you remember the Pharisee prayed, I fast twice a week. Their fasting schedule usually coincided with market days, when it was common for everybody to go out into the market. And so what happens is they emphasize, they manufacture that, you know, this physical appearance so that, okay, so I, you know, the almost the sackcloth and ashes look, so that everybody knew they were fasting. And weren't they so great because they were fasting? Because actually the way that the law refers to fasting, like for the Day of Atonement, is afflicting one's soul. And so there was this connection between fasting and religious devotion. So those are some religious people. There's some very spiritually minded people because I can see them fasting. And they were manufacturing that to play up so that they would be seen by people. That's not how it should be for us. Doing righteous things should be the natural and automatic expression of our devotion to God. We do it because it's the right thing to do, because it's the thing that we know that that's what God would want us to do. And so whether somebody sees us, whether nobody sees us, whether the recipient knows, whether they don't know, whatever, we do it because it's the thing to do as the circumstances present themselves. It's just, and you know, we talk about spiritual life. Well, part of spiritual life is, you know, part of life is breathing, you know. And so we could almost say, and having a daughter born premature in the NICU for 2 weeks has made me realize this is not as something to be taken for granted, but it should be as natural as breathing, doing acts of righteousness, whether it's directed towards others or it's some act of devotion. It should just come naturally to us if we're focused on God. Because we practice righteousness for God's glory. If our interest is God's glory, these things are just going to happen. It's just going to be automatic. We won't even think anything about it. Because it's just, that's just the way it is. But I should also say, another way that we do this is we act by default. Now, what I mean by that is, a lot of times the situation arises. Hey, there's this need. And we spend all of our time talking ourselves out of why we need to, out of needing to do something about it. Think about 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and the Macedonian brethren. Paul writes, I can testify that according to their ability and even beyond their ability of their own accord, they begged us earnestly for the privilege of sharing in the ministry to the saints, and not just as we had hoped. Instead, they gave themselves first to the Lord and then to us by God's will. Now, in the context as Paul is explaining what's going on here, the Macedonian brethren weren't that wealthy. You had a few, like Lydia, who, you know, she's a seller of purple, so that has some implications on wealth. But the picture that Paul paints in 2 Corinthians 8 is not one of great prosperity, but one of poverty. And yet, even with that poverty, it's almost like Paul even tried to talk them out of it. It's like, no, this is fine. You don't have to do that. No, we're going to do it. Their default response was to act, was to do something. When an occasion presents itself, whether it's for doing good for others, whether it's prayer, some other opportunity, we can talk about things like spreading the gospel. There's this process probably most of us go through is We recognize what needs to be done. We acknowledge there's this first impulse of this is what I ought to be doing. And then there's that second impulse where we start talking ourselves out of it. Well, maybe somebody else to do it. Well, and especially when it comes to doing giving money to anybody. Well, you know, I don't know how they're going to use that, or I don't know what, you know. We spend more time talking ourselves out of that than if we just did it. We know what we need to do. We know what we need to do. We have those first impulses where we recognize instinctively, here's what needs to be done. I ought to talk to this person about the gospel. And then we talk ourselves out of that. Now, I want to kind of make a counterpart to what Jesus, Jesus is talking about what people do to be seen of men. Now, we're talking about what we don't do to be seen of men because we're afraid of what the reaction might be if we do something. I dare say that Jesus would have just as much and much the same to say about that as he would the other, or as he did the other. James said that the one who knows the right thing to do and doesn't do it, to him it is sin. How many times do we know what we need to do and then talk ourselves out of it? Maybe we talk ourselves out of it because we're afraid of it becoming a big spectacle. Because we're afraid everybody's going to see it and react to it. And we just don't want that publicity. We don't want everybody making a big to-do about it. We don't want people assuming certain motives about it. I'll give you one from my own life. I think I've talked about before. If you want to call it this, my conversion story. I was baptized when I was 15, almost 16. And probably, if I had to go back and look, kind of replay the tape of my thoughts on the subject, I probably spent the 5, 6, 7 years leading up to that knowing what I needed to do and talking myself out of it. Well, so-and-so was just baptized last week. I don't want anybody thinking I'm doing it because of them. Today's a holiday. I don't want anybody thinking I'm doing it because it's a holiday. I don't want everybody rushing up to me. I don't want to come forward during the invitation because I don't want everybody rushing up to me and hugging me. What I later found out, for those who don't like to be hugged, is that doing it after is worse because then you spend the next 3 weeks getting hugged by everybody. Just saying. But how many years did I spend knowing what I needed to do on that and being miserable because I wasn't doing it? How long have you spent knowing about something that needed to be done, whether it's being baptized, whether it's doing something for somebody else, whether it's something talking to somebody about the gospel? How long have you spent knowing what you've needed to do and making yourself miserable, talking yourself out of doing it? Rather than acting by default. And I know there are times where rushing into things gets us in trouble. And I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about we understand there's something right to do. there is an opportunity to do good. Take it. Because we practice righteousness for God's glory, not our own. And then the third thing, and I think this touches more directly on the public versus private aspect of this. Ignore the audience. Like I said, we get hung up on this, do people see us or not? And yes, I realize that the introverts among us, we don't want a big deal made about it. But you know, there's another issue in terms of ignoring the audience is when people don't make the deal of it we want them to. No one said thank you. How many times have we let that sink us in terms of doing good things? Because the last time we did it, nobody said thank you. Nobody even seemed to acknowledge what we did. So why bother? Notice, so Jesus says, you know, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Now, let's be real. Yeah. Maybe one of the people with a medical degree could say otherwise, but I don't think what Jesus is talking about is having some kind of brain operation done to separate the hemispheres of our brain so that we don't know what the other, what one side is doing versus the other. I don't think that's what Jesus is saying here. Or that we're going to put a curtain down the middle of our face so that what's happening on the right side isn't known by what's happening on the left side. Okay. So we understand Jesus is speaking hyperbolically here, right? So Jesus' point is act as if nobody is watching. Just do it. If people see, oh well. If people don't see, oh well. If people see and respond, okay. If people see and don't respond, what does that change? It was still the right thing to do. The problem is when we start paying the attention to the audience, that's where we want our reward from. Because Jesus talks about they did things to be seen by men, to be observed by people, to be obvious to people. And Jesus says over and over again, they have their reward. The goal of the hypocrites was to be noticed by people. That was their goal. That was the prize, is for people to call them great things. Jesus talks about that in chapter 23 as well. Jesus says, well, they got what they wanted out of it. They got their reward. They're not getting anything else. Because we're going to be rewarded by those whose praise we seek. Our goal is to glorify God. So what happens among people in terms of notice, recognition, praise, and all that? That's secondary. That's not even an issue. We're doing this to glorify God. And the thing is, when there's nobody watching, we can have the wrong motive. Going back to that example from that MASH episode, you know, we're really good at patting ourselves on the back. I'm surprised you don't have more broken arms and shoulders from us patting ourselves on the back for the good things that we do or the good things we think we do. Guess what? It's not any better than sounding a trumpet before you. You're still not doing it for God's glory. You're still doing it to make yourself feel good about it. You're still doing it to comfort yourself, to have something you can hang your hat on saying, look at what I did. we practice righteousness for God's glory, not for our own. Jesus talks, so we focus on God. We act by default, and we ignore the audience. Jesus talks about these three ideas of doing good or giving to the poor. He talks about prayer. He talks about fasting. There's any number of other things we could talk about. When we do these things, this is how we do it to glorify God, by making God the focus so that everything that comes after that is a natural extension of our desire to glorify God, of our desire to do what he says and to love neighbor as self, to love the Lord, our God, with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. And that should prompt us to action. We know what God wants us to do in this situation, so do it. No matter who may or may not see it. No matter how they may or may not react to it, because it's still the right thing to do. What righteousness have you been putting off? What righteousness have you been doing for the wrong reasons? What righteousness can we help you do? Can we help you make that step to begin to serve God and glorify God in your life by being baptized? Can we help you make that step of doing things in your life that please God, regardless of who may or may not see? If we can help you with that, let us know as we stand and as we sing.